We're good. You ready?
Oh, I'm ready. You ready?
Bring it. You start us going.
You want to start while you're drinking?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You want to start every day drinking?
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready to Zoom? Boom.
That's right, coming to you live from Asterios' apartment, it's Boomer versus Zoomer, episode 14, and the guy who has never seen a full episode of Star Trek, it's me, Monkey Jones, your Zoomer hero, joined as always by Boomer extraordinaire, the man who knows memes but doesn't care, one Asterios Kokonos.
I've heard about the Shaggy meme. He uses 10% of his mind. I'm using 100% of mine to not care about the Shaggy meme. Hello.
Now, Asterios, a little peek behind the curtain to begin the episode. We're desperate to get advertisers on the show. We want this to be an advertiser-friendly show so we can make those big podcast bucks.
Yes.
So let me start episode 14 by asking you, in any context, is it ever appropriate to sexualize a baby?
No.
No.
No, for an advertiser?
No, for in any context whatsoever. Would you feel comfortable if somebody sexualized an image of a newborn baby?
No?
No, okay. The reason why I ask is because Sheepover, my girlfriend and I, we've been having a little debate because mm-hmm. I did this morning. So I want to tell you why I did it, and then let's see if you change your perspective on the sexualization of a photo of a baby. So when mm-hmm. I was born, I live in such a small town that a newborn baby is a big story.
Okay.
So the image of me and all my stuff was in the local paper.
Okay.
Big picture of baby Mumkey. It said, "Welcome to the world, Mumkey Rutherford Jones. Oh, what a beautiful baby. He's 22 inches long." You know, they give me all my stats like I'm a baseball card, but I'm just a newborn baby. And I sent that picture of the newspaper article to my girlfriend, and I said, "How does it feel to have a 22-inch boyfriend?" Which is like a sexual pun, as in my penis, Asterios, is 22 inches. Mm-hmm. But also, according to the paper, I was 22. She said, "Please don't sexualize an image of a baby." But it's a picture of me, and I thought it was funny. What is the boomer perspective?
Okay, first off, slight punch up. You should have said, "How does it feel having this 22-incher inside you?" And then sent a picture of that baby. Okay, that would have been funnier.
See, you just made it way dirtier than I did, so you're playing right into the hand.
If you're gonna go blue, at least hit the note.
I mean, at least I'm sexualizing my own baby picture. You're sexualizing a baby picture that is not you.
I'm sexualizing nothing!
You've gone the extra mile.
Nothing! I'm gonna say it.
The N-word?
No! What? Hey! Oh my god! Advertisers! We are looking for monkeys! You can be disgusting on the rest of the Monkey Jones family of products and channels! This is the one, if we could just play by the rules! Okay.
So it's a no to sexualizing my own baby photos.
I hate, if you don't mind me saying it, this does get complicated.
Right.
People do have the inherent right to do with themselves and their culture what they will.
Yes.
For example, if in an African-American made rap song with an African-American male singer singing and rapping, he happens to use a word that I wouldn't use.
Well, a word that you're not allowed to use, Asterios.
I'm not allowed to use, wouldn't use, don't want to use. Again, I call it the between M and O word.
Right, right.
Because I don't even like that letter.
Wow.
I don't.
That's why he never says no. He's such a natural born improv comedian. He's yes anding even in real life.
I'm yes anding right your racism, Monkey.
Whoa.
Okay, but yikes. Given that we allow Woody Allen to make jokes about the Semitic people that non-Semites might not be able to make, by that same logic, aren't you allowed to make
sex jokes about my own baby photos?
About baby you?
Right.
And if you're not, Isn't that kind of like telling a woman that she can't do whatever she wants with her body, even though it's 2019, the current year? You know what I'm saying? Sure, this is complicated now.
Have you ever watched any sketches by the Whitest Kids You Know?
Yes, yes, I've seen a lot of their sketches. I'm not a huge fan.
They have a sketch that is very similar to this premise, and it's very short. Can I just explain it to you?
Please.
I've rewatched this all the time. It's very, very funny to me.
Okay.
It's a man sitting at his computer, and he's masturbating, and we don't see what he's masturbating to, but he's really into it. Then his wife walks into the room and sees, and she's and he's like, oh, no, I'm not doing anything. And she's like, are you masturbating to baby pictures? And I'm thinking, well, this is some fucked up dark comedy right here. But then she takes a closer look and she kind of smiles and says, my baby pictures. And they like they cuddle up and then like an ad pops up like this is a Valentine's Day ad for Walmart or something. And I always thought that was the funniest 25-second sketch I've ever seen.
Okay, that's pretty funny. that's a pretty funny sketch. Look, here's my impression. I don't even have it. Every Whitest Kids You Know sketch that I've ever seen has a straight man who is just screaming way too much. And of course, by straight man, I don't mean a non-LGBT community person. I mean, like, there's always someone in Whitest Kids You Know being like, stop spilling detergent everywhere. I can't believe now there's coffee everywhere.
It's probably Zach.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just like, you know, at some point, this guy should just leave this laundromat. Like, he should probably stop. Like, I don't know why he's standing here for 4.5 minutes screaming about the bad service laundromat. At some point, call the cops.
All right. There's a sketch from Whitest Kids You Know that I think is underrated that everybody in the world would have to find funny. Okay. They built a space shuttle set.
That's the only good sketch I've seen by them because there is no, because it's like at least something's happening in this sketch. All right, you tell people about the sketch.
It's just that they have like a vertical set where one guy is sitting way up above the other two guys and they're about to launch into space, but he keeps opening snacks and the whole, yes, it's 5 minutes of him just spilling food on the two guys at the bottom and like potatoes and cereal are falling on them and it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, you know why that's a good sketch? Because those guys can't get out of the spaceship. They're trapped. They found a story reason why these two straight men have to put up with this guy's antics. But every other fucking sketch of theirs is just like a date that's gone wrong. It's like, leave the restaurant. Just go. The manager will probably be cool about comping this meal if you say I went on a date with a Gremlins 2 fan who keeps mentioning Gremlins 2 stuff all the time. And he's like, well, this is just like the lady Gremlin. He's like, all these sketches, they hit the theme way too hard. They hit it way too hard. Well, am I alone on this? What do you think?
I was going to ask you, in your 20 years as a comedian, have you ever had as much fun in any performance or role as, I think it was Trevor Moore, lying vertically up in the air, trying to pour a bowl of cereal on his chest and spilling it everywhere? Have you ever had a role that was that much fun to play?
I'm trying to think. We did this sketch a long ass time ago called Too Many Spit Takes, which was, I don't know, it was about like a spit take academy or something. And then, it's like a sketch within a sketch, like somebody's doing spit takes and then a guy from the studio is saying that those are too many spit takes. But then the director does a spit take about that. And then there's like a million spit takes. And that was a lot of fun. But then SNL did some sketch where Jack Black keeps doing wine spit takes all over Seth Meyers. And I was like, oh, we can't do this sketch anymore. Yeah, I mean, I do like, I remember one time a bunch of us rented, me and my buddies, my sketch buddies in college, we all rented a limo and then we shot 3 sketches with the limo. But we got to drive around in Boston all day in a limo, like waving at people, sticking our heads out the sunroof. There is something to be said for like making comedy as an excuse to do something. Kind of like how all those goddamn Adam Sandler movies are clearly just an excuse for him to go on vacation. Like, remember Blended takes place in Africa for no reason? 51st Dates takes place in Hawaii. Like, there's all like the Grown Ups and the Grown Ups 2 both have Adam Sandler and his friends from Saturday Night Live going on vacation somewhere. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I try to come up with comedy reasons to do stupid things all the time. I wanted to get a bowl cut because I thought it'd be funny, so I made up a whole short film for us so that I could get a bowl cut in real life.
I remember the day after you got that, the day after we're done shooting Sheep Over, being like, oh, thank God, now my boyfriend can have normal hair again. One time I told Sriracha, I said, for the first episode of this one podcast, I want you to give me a haircut live on stream.
Uh-oh.
And she was like, I won't do that.
No.
And I was like, why? And she was like, because I have to live with you and see you every moment you're not in this sketch.
Yeah, I became a big fan of wearing hats in the months after losing all my hair.
You looked pretty good. I like that bowl cut, actually. And I liked your mohawk, too. But wait, speaking of having fun, we had a lot of fun at the live show. You want to tell people about the live shows?
Yeah. This is our first episode back after doing the live from Manhattan, New York City, folks. Basically two sold out shows.
Yes.
Whether people snuck in or not, I don't know. All the seats were full. First time doing a live podcast. First time performing in front of an audience, not as a character in a play or musical. Just as myself. So that was an interesting experience.
Was that your first time in front of a live audience since high school?
No, I did some plays in college too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still, I was like, oh my, because you were doing real well up there.
Yeah, I really enjoy the being up on a stage in front of people. I think it's a dying genre. We're always sitting here in front of fucking cameras going on the internet to an audience of thousands of people, but really it feels much more fun and electrifying to be in front of just 40 people who are actually there in person. And you've done a lot of live shows like this. How did this one compare to the other ones that you've done recently?
Live shows have gotten a lot better.
Did they used to be bad for you?
Oh, yeah, because
I want to hear about your biggest bomb.
I mean, they're not like great.
It sounds like a horrible story. That's why I want to hear it.
But they're also not great bad story. Oh, okay. Well, the first time I ever did stand up, I did stand up for a bunch of Cheesecake Factory employees. And so
on their break?
They all just came out to they were all together. Because a bunch of people walked into this theater wearing Cheesecake Factory employees. They'd come straight from the factory. And
you try to riff on like the Cheesecake Factory in front of them?
Yes, immediately. I was like, you guys, your fucking menu is the size of the Bible. Like, one slice of your cheesecake will give you a heart attack. I was like, you should all be ashamed of yourself. You're poisoning people every day with this Oreo cheesecake sludge. I thought it would be very funny and they'd find a lot of humor in there.
It was a little too honest.
They were not happy with me speaking truth to power about the Cheesecake Factory.
To power? These are poor employees who say, I hate working here 10 hours a day. Let's go get some levity. Let's go. For once in my life, I don't want to think about the Cheesecake Factory. Let's go to this comedy show, Asterios Kokonos. He sounds funny. I wonder what he's going to bring.
I thought they could commiserate how it's just like, oh, we all work hard and we all have to wear the scars, but at the end of the day, don't we all love the cheesecake?
It would be like if all the Stoneman Douglas parents went to the Louis C.K. show trying to laugh for an hour and he's saying, your kids died, that's funny. Remember that shit? That was you. Was you with the Cheesecake Factory workers.
One of the Sandy Hook parents did do a stand-up routine back to Louis C.K. about how their kid was dead.
Wait, Sandy Hook?
Or Stoneman Douglas, sorry.
I was
sorry.
Like, why the
We're
fuck would they care?
Our school.
There's way too many school shootings.
Seems like there's
we
a
can't
lot
keep
of
track of all of them.
There's a lot of school shootings in the news today. Yeah, we should watch that.
A school shooting?
No, God, no, but this dad did a routine about, I don't know. But anyway,
was the dead kid's stand-up comedian father funny? That's the question.
I haven't seen it because I'm saying to myself, I can't watch this. Oh. This is like a dad's, like,
the ultimate dad joke.
Yes, exactly. This is like a dad's angry. But anyway, that was my first time doing stand-up. But stand-up is, doing comedy is a lot more fun now because now we do this thing where when me and Sriracha do a show, or when Monkey, when you and I do a show, we all go out afterwards and drink. And so it's
and that's what people are really paying for.
That's
I think.
Yeah. It's like, that's the show. Like, the show is we all go out and we get fucked up and someone's brought weed.
Yeah, the hour on stage is more of a formality for an excuse for us all to go party all night.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. For us to all, and for people to meet each other. And so, like, shows have become less of this, like, do or die if everything you say doesn't get a laugh, you're dead thing. Like we
something interesting I found though.
Yeah.
And I talked to my buddy Rusty Cage on a different podcast about the experience of doing the show earlier this week, but that hasn't come out yet, and they're very slow at updating, so this will actually come out first. Yeah. But the conversation we had was essentially, does it feel stifling or perhaps pathetic as a comedian when you're preaching essentially to the choir? You're doing a live show of people who are exclusively your diehard fans, so much so that they would pay $20 to come see you in person, where basically no matter what we would say, whether it was funny or not, would get some sort of reaction. And Rusty was really grilling me on this, perhaps out of genuine curiosity, perhaps out of he wants to make me feel bad, which is very fun. But I was thinking, yeah, is that going to affect my growth as a comedian if these people are forcing themselves to laugh at everything we say on stage?
That's not how it works. Like, I understand why somebody would think that.
Well, because even last night when we went to the Flophouse live show, which was a great show,
yeah.
I found myself, maybe it's just because we're in an audience atmosphere, but I was laughing at things that if I was just listening to it at home alone, I wouldn't have been laughing out loud at. You know, it's like you want to laugh because you're there in front of the people.
Well, laughter is contagious. Yeah. You know, it's like comedy isn't meant to be watched by yourself depressed at like 2 a.m.
I've been doing it wrong for years.
Yeah, you gotta go to a movie theater and then everything's funnier, everything's better with a crowd. But I'll say this, it's like before he, like I remember watching Louis C.K. He was preparing for the season 2 finale of Louis. And he came by and he did stand.
Oh, wait, he came by in a hotel room with women or?
He came
on the floor.
He came right by these women who did not want to see it. They were super unhappy.
Oof.
He came by, he did a drop in at a stand up show I was doing, and he was the hottest comedian in the world at the time. This was like season 1 of Louis had already had all the
comedians. Must be pretty ugly if he's the hottest one. Egads.
Oh my God. He's like
ultimate dad bud.
Yeah, but but he's uglier than most dads. He's like he's like ugly Uncle Louie. But so he comes in, he's doing this material, and it bombed. And I also remember in the Seinfeld documentary, I think it's just called Comedian. Like, it opens with him bombing. Like, Jerry Seinfeld and Louis C.K. are people who everyone gives the benefit of the doubt to, and it's kind of like, for the first 5 minutes, they don't have to be doing great. But like after a while, you're kind of like, all right, well, you do got to give me something, though. Like, I am here. I feel like...
So it wasn't just a privilege that the audience gets to see them. Because I felt like almost that's the level it felt for us, where we could just be up here doing nothing and these people would probably be happy that they get to see us.
No.
Because I was happy to see them.
I think that...
I was happy to see the Flophouse guys, even if they weren't doing anything. I'd be like, well, I've been such a fan for years. It's just cool to see them in person on a stage. They don't need to give a top stellar performance to me. I'm part of the problem, I guess, as an audience member. I don't need them to be good. I'm just happy to even be in the same room.
But I think if they were bad, you would be like, this is kind of bad, but I do like these guys. Because we've all been in that situation where we've been in the crowd and we're rooting for the guy on stage. Mm. It's like, oh, this is a new stand-up. Oh, my niece is trying out stand-up. Oh, it's like, but you can't will yourself to find something funny. You can will yourself to find something pleasant. You can, like, will yourself to find something entertaining. You'd be like, oh, I could watch this for an hour. It's just so interesting to watch these guys. But it's like, you can't buy laughs, and you can't, like, guilt laughs. Like, one of the things that Roger Ebert always said was he was like, you can't convince someone to laugh, and you can't convince someone into an erection, which is why, like,
those are both false. I can talk you into an erection right now.
Sriracha? What? Okay, she's not paying attention. Oh my God. What was it? I did, when me and Sriracha went to Montreal, I did stand up for that Montreal crowd, and it was the first time I had done like 20 minutes of stand-up.
And those are people who specifically came to see Asterios Kokonos, the famous podcaster. Not to see some random stand-up show, but they came to see you.
Yeah, they came. They bought tickets in advance. They came to see us.
And the stand-up bombed?
It didn't bomb, but it didn't. But it was my first time doing stand-up in years, and so it didn't, like, kill. And I remember saying to myself, like, after, like, that's, it's so interesting because if there's any audience that you would expect to just be like auto-programmed to love this, it's these people who spent $20 and came to an apartment in Montreal on a Wednesday night. Like, and I was like, you know what? This is actually kind of cool. Like, I'll keep practicing. I'll get my legs back. But I just, I thought it was interesting how it wasn't an automatic success. Cause I was like, that's good. It means like these people are playing by the rules. They're not just gonna like fake their laughter.
So what you're saying is at our live show, I was wrong to assume they were laughing perhaps out of pity or necessity, but in fact, our live show was actually very good and funny, and that if we go on tour around the country, people should come check it out. Is that what you're saying, Asterios?
The show is great. Like, there's not even going to be an argument. And if you are a dollar patron to me, did you send it to your patrons
too? Yeah, it's on all my patrons too.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, literally, if you give either of us at least $1, you can hear it live. You can watch the high-quality video for $5. But we're also just selling it too. Like, just PayPal us and we'll just send you a link. Like, we don't care that much. But I thought that show was such a huge success. And then also, hold on, we've got some more tour information.
So, oh shit.
So in episode 13, whatever our last episode was before the live show, we told people, you know, we want to go on like a shoestring tour.
We want to go across the country if you can get us a free venue.
Yes. Now, the most expensive part of going across the country, the most expensive part of touring is renting a venue. But if we can use your backyard, if your dad owns a bar that has a back room, if you work at a used car lot and you want to just open up the showroom for the night and let us all tell jokes and then you can sell some car, like, let's work
together. Let us sleep in the cars.
Let us sleep in your RAV4s and 4Runners. So, a dude immediately from D.C. says, you could use my backyard at the end of July. Wait,
was this Donald Trump? Are we doing this in the Rose Garden?
You know, I would do that. Are you fucking kidding
what
me?
What if Barron Trump, and I mean this wholeheartedly, what if in real life Barron Trump was a big Asterios Kokonos fan and he wanted you to come do a show for his birthday? Would you do it at the White House with all the Trumps in attendance?
Yes.
Would you hold back from roasting the president? Would you keep it apolitical?
Here's what I think.
For the sake of poor little 10-year-old Barron who loves your comedy. Sure. He just wants you to juggle a porg and maybe shock yourself. He doesn't want any political jokes. What would you do?
Okay, here's what I'll do. A, Barron Trump, I would not try to, because here's the thing. If I can convince him of one thing after the show when we're taking pictures and we're just talking, it's like the act would be super vanilla. But the thing is, if I can influence and lobby Barron Trump, and then Barron Trump can go to his dad and Barron can be like, I want you to let these immigrants out of their jails now. I want them out of these cages now, daddy. Like, then, you see what I'm saying?
Is there any recorded audio of him speaking? I want to know if he actually talks like that.
I'm that's Barron very Trump. Funny. I sound like this, daddy.
He's like a character in the original Willy Wonka movie.
He's Violet Beauregard from the original Willy Wonka. Didn't you see he got grapefied that one day? It took him all day to squeeze him.
What? That happened to Barron?
That happened to BT, Barron Trump, baby.
Well, you're calling him BT already. You guys sound like you've been emailing back and forth.
I'm just saying, if I can become BFFs
with a 12-year-old boy,
you gotta get your influence where you can. You know why the minimum wage went up in the 90s? I'll tell you exactly why. Because there was a man named Robert Reich. He's 5'1" tall.
My hero.
He's like a teeny tiny boy.
No need for that.
And there was one seat in the presidential motorcade next to Bill Clinton that was like a child's seat.
Like a booster seat.
Like a booster seat. And he was like, I can fit in this seat. And so he would literally ride all around D.C. right next to Bill Clinton until he eventually convinced him to raise the minimum wage.
But what did it used to be in the 90s? Because it's still dog shit at $7.25 right now.
It was like $4.25.
That's a fucking that's insane.
Yeah, I know. Yes. In New York, thank God, the minimum wage is now $15 an hour.
Yeah, well.
Thank fucking Christ. And like in New York and in San Francisco, like in San Francisco, there's now mandatory sick time in New York. You now get 5 automatic sick days.
I guess the cost of living is so different on the coast, because in the Midwest, at least in Iowa, people with 4-year degrees, some of them make less than $15 an hour and are happy with their wage. But it's so much cheaper to live there, though. So I guess it's kind of apples and oranges. If they made $15 minimum wage like a federal thing, like all states, I think that might fuck some shit up, because the cost of living is so different from state to state.
I think the way to do it fairly is just like minimum number of employees. Like, if you have less than 500, if you have more than 500 employees, you got to pay this. You have less than that. Because, like, well, obviously, like, some mom and pop, like a deli that's run by a mom, a pop, and one, and like one person. Like, yeah, I don't know that they can afford to give their employee health insurance and minimum wage, but it's like, but then fucking Walmart certainly can. Like, holy, yeah, you know, yeah. It's like there's always some compromise.
Iowa is so cheap to live in that when I was going to college, I had a 20-hour part-time job at a hardware store. And I was thinking about moving out, and I did the research, and I could afford a one-bedroom apartment all by myself, and then other expenses, of course, just working at that 20-hour part-time job while going to college. It would have covered the expense.
I was thinking,
like, wow, no matter what happens in my life, if I get banned off of every platform, every Patreon, every Twitch, I could easily go work part-time in Iowa and rent out an apartment by myself, and I could afford it. That's why everybody, if you become a truly desperate man, move to Iowa. There is bucks aplenty for you.
That's fucking awesome. And Captain Kirk's from Iowa.
Yeah.
Wait, but speaking of Iowa, if you are in Iowa and can get us a venue, all right, so here's some of the cities that people are talking to us about.
We've got Washington, D.C.
Yeah, D.C. Okay.
Somewhere in Texas, I believe.
A dude in Boulder, Colorado sent me... Yes, perfect! Yes, okay! We're definitely going to Boulder then. He works at a bar, maximum occupancy of 80.
That's more than we need.
Yeah, exactly. We're like, yeah, we'll fucking take it. There's a guy in Houston named Shane. There's a guy in...
Probably Shane Dawson.
There's a guy in Quebec named Michael.
Probably Michael Moore.
There's a dude in Salem. Did I ever tell you that I almost got a job with Michael Moore?
In a lookalike contest?
God damn it, Monkey! if you weren't so small, I'd kick your ass. Literally, we were like beating up a toddler. So, Salem. Fucking Salem.
Why were you going to work with Michael Moore?
I'll tell you a story to end the show. Okay, how about that? I'll tell you a story to end the show. Salem, near Portland, there's a dude. He works at like a 20-person indie movie theater.
Now, is this the Salem witch trial, Salem?
No, that's Salem, Massachusetts, I think.
Ah, okay.
That's witch trial Salem. But it's only an hour out of Portland. He runs a little...
If we do the show, can I make Salem witch trial jokes anyway?
Yeah, I will.
I think the locals will laugh both at and with us.
They'll be so high they won't care. It's fucking Portland. But this could be great because he has a small little movie theater. He says he can also get us free alcoholic drinks, which is a big expense right off the bat.
Would we be able to play our short film in the theater?
That's what I think. We could have like you could have a Monkey Jones Film Festival.
Oh, fuck,
we could have a Boomer
Zoomer
Film Festival. And the thing is, like, and then for people watching at home, it's like they get the theatrical experience too.
They can pretend they're watching a cam rip because we'll be filming the movie screen.
I'll directly patch the thing to the... I'll get it patched.
It's much better aesthetic if we're filming from inside the theater.
That's true. And you can see like people's shadow heads
in
the front.
Yeah, people stand up to go to the bathroom.
Sacramento! There's this dude who goes to the State University of California, Sacramento. And he's like, I want you guys to do a show. And all these people are offering free venues. So, if you're listening, you want us in your town.
Or if you live in or near any of the places we just named, let us know so we actually know to go there.
Yes, exactly. Tell us where you want us, and tell us if you have if your uncle has a mini golf course that we can set up a comedy show at the 18th hole of, and then it's get the ball in the clown's mouth, and we can make it a thing. We can have themes. Are you into this, Monkey?
Yeah. I mean, I want to travel. I imagine we'll get a clown car that we both sleep in while we're driving around the country.
Yes.
And we'll the whole trunk will be full of props that you don't want to be there, like MAGA hats and deadly lollipops and all these things.
Okay, great.
And it'll just be a torturous adventure, and then we'll go home with about $400 each in our pocket after doing about a dozen shows.
We could make money on this tour. We could. If people let us stay on their couch or their floor, that's money out of the door.
Yikes.
If we essentially create
like a homeless vagabond comedy show.
That's what touring is. It's about minimizing expenses and maximizing yucks. Okay. Speaking of maximizing yucks, though.
I want to hear about this Michael Moore story.
Michael Moore thing. Man, this is the closest I've ever come to getting a television writing job.
Oh, shit.
It was so great. A dude from out of nowhere, he just got in touch with me on Facebook.
Michael Moore.
No, I wish. He got in touch with me on Facebook, and he's like, I'm a big fan of your comedy.
How long ago was this?
When were the midterms? Midterms were in 2018. This was in maybe December or November of 2017.
Okay.
So not too long ago. It was right around the time when Michael Moore had, I don't have it here, but he had a show on Broadway called The Terms of My Surrender. He was doing like a one-man show on Broadway, and he had sold a show to TNT. That was just going to be kind of a new version of The Awful Truth or a new version of TV Nation. Like, Michael Moore for a long time was this really funny television comedian where he would just go and pull like all these crazy stunts. Like, it was like in the 90s and before then, it was like really hard for an African-American person to get a taxi. So he would like do an experiment where he would have like a super clean cut African-American guy and like an actor playing like a white crackhead, like both trying to get a taxi. And of course,
you were going to play the crackhead in the show.
Sorry?
You were going to play the crackhead in the show. That was your big chance to work with Michael Moore.
I wish, God damn.
They said, this guy's perfect. He came already dressed up, and you said, I'm auditioning for a different role, but okay.
They're like, he seems so scattered, and he smells like drugs.
He smells like urine.
There's something wrong with his eyes that we love. You're hired. And then, of course, the crackhead would always get picked up, and then Michael Moore would, like, up the ante. He'd be like, we got Danny Glover. He just won an Oscar this year. Let's put Danny Glover here. And, like, a white guy with a gun. And, like, let's see who the taxi picks up. So, like, he would do, like, these...
Wait, so was the experiment to see if Muslim people are racist? Because, I mean, if it's a New York taxi driver, there's a... You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God. Stop making things more complicated! Anyway, so... And so I had... So they said, eh, come write... See, you know, write a pitch pack for Michael Moore. So we're all these, like, crazy stunts. I wrote up a bunch of ideas for, like, the... I forget what the gags I wrote were.
The idea that every middle schooler came up with where...
Wait, which one?
You lock a lesbian and a gay guy up in a room and don't let them out till they have sex.
Ooh, what?
Every middle schooler I've ever met, like, came up with that idea independently. Like, wouldn't that be a funny experiment? And I'm thinking, that doesn't make as much sense as an adult.
I'm starting to realize that a lot of these things aren't your fault. They're how you were raised. Because everything up until now, I'm like, edgelord. And now I'm like, what?
Because well,
11-year-old
when
edgelord.
You're in middle school, you assume that they would be mortal enemies, not realizing, actually, the LGBT community is very close-knit, and they all love each other. He's like, oh, man, lesbian, that they would hate men. Gay right. guy would hate women. Yeah, let's put them together. But no, that's not how
yes,
it would work.
Of course they would. Natural enemies like cats and dogs. Yes. Who taught you that lesbians and gays hate each other?
Again,
oil and water.
Iowa is very cheap to live in, but you also get a very good education. You get what you pay for.
Okay. All right, well, moving back to me. Oh, yeah, so I had this idea where, like, we would... I found out some statistic where it was like 30% of people believe in global warming, but 60% of people believe in ghosts. So I put a bunch of global warming deniers in a haunted house and then like see if the ghosts could convince them that like that the ice caps are melting. I wanted to do this thing. It was at the time of the trans bathroom law bullshit. And like
bullshit because you agree they should not be allowed in, right?
Anyway, moving
I'm
right
trying to
past,
figure out what you're meaning.
Moving right past that. And so I would always see these interviews with dudes being like, I've never gone to the bathroom and there's been a trans person there. And now things are changing. And so I wanted
just
to
like
this,
the bodies, you know what I'm saying?
And so I wanted to do this trick where we had like anti-trans activists come in and speak to us. but then the bathroom that they would use between takes would be filled with hundreds of hidden trans people. There'd be like a trans guy in the garbage, and like the toilet that you're sitting on, like he gets up and it's a chair, and there's like a trans person. There's like trans people in the ceilings, and just to be like, you have gone to the bathroom with trans people, you just don't know it. Maybe it's not that big a deal.
It's not even about going to the bathroom with a trans person. I think it's more of not wanting to go to the bathroom with somebody of the opposite gender. So why not just, the experiment should be something along the lines of go to their house and designate each of their bathrooms for being one gender, and they'll see how annoying it is. Oh, I can't use this. This is a woman's bathroom. I can't use it. Even though, like, at their house, it's a multi-gendered bathroom. Why is it any fucking different?
Yeah, I don't. Honestly,
I'm just going in here to take a shit. I don't care who else is taking a shit. Why does it matter?
No, I mean, obviously, like, I don't think it matters. Like, the point I was trying to make...
I know you know that.
Well, the point that I was trying to make was, like, because it's like, look, we haven't had trans bathroom laws since... It's like, there were no trans bathroom laws until the late 2000s and the 2010s when gay marriage became legal. And so they were like, well, now we need another reason to scare people to the polls. But, like, my point was, like, you've gone to the bathroom with trans people in the next stall before. You've just... It's like, why would you ever look... Like, why would you...
would you care who else is taking a shit?
Yeah, yes. It's like we're both in here to go poo-poo. Like, yeah. This is not... How much time do
this
you spend...
This isn't a
like,
masturbation center.
Yeah, it's like how much time do you spend paying attention to your neighbor's equipment? Like, just let them take a dump and then let's all... Who wants to hang out in the bathroom? So that was the gag. But I get in there, I interview them. I mean, they interview me. And I say, I think one of my strengths is... that I have a lot of conservative friends, and I've dated conservative women, and
were you talking about Sarancha when you said that?
Sarancha is a gun owner.
Yeah, well.
She's a hot little gun owner.
That's right.
Yeah, it's hot as hell.
She also is a big fan of Mike Cernovich, I believe.
Yep, she tried to go to Mike Cernovich's move. Oh, we have to tell that story. We never have. Sriracha got uninvited to Mike Cernovich's big movie premiere, and she's still very upset about it. But I said, like, I know a lot of conservatives, and so I said, I feel like you're going to get a lot of comedy writers in here who are going to know how to
preach live in a bubble. Choir. Yeah.
But I was like, me, I spent a lot of my time trying to convince, and I think it would be good if you had
you someone- understand both sides. You're not bubbled in your perception.
Well, it's like...
You don't agree with both sides, but you see where everybody's coming from.
Well, if you can't listen, then it's like, what's the fucking point?
Preach to the choir like Michael Moore loves to do.
Well, they said, you know conservatives?
You're out. Get the fuck out of here.
I was like, yes, I know a lot of conservatives. And like, they were all like, where have you met conservatives?
What?
I'm not kidding.
Where are these people aliens?
That's when I kind of realized like how bad this whole bubble thing is. Like, I'm thinking to myself, in college, I knew one conservative, my friend Dan. He was like a New Jersey conservative.
Dan McCoy went to college with you?
No, Dan McCoy did not go to college with me. He's also not a conservative.
Wait, you mean one of the lead writers on The Daily Show is not a conservative, Asterios? I don't believe you.
Who would have thought that this divorced Brooklyn drug addict might not...
Wait, Dan's a drug addict?
No, he's not.
What are you talking about? He's just is sad.
No, he's not. He's not. He's everything's cool. Oh, wow. But yeah, I mean, in college I knew like one conservative.
Now, what college did you go to?
I went to Emerson up in Boston.
So what does an Emerson Boston conservative look like? Like, does he think that it's okay to own one gun? Like, is he like, he's like on the edge of conservatives, or what does that look like?
He was in guns rights. He was,
the NRA.
Yeah, he was in the NRA. He was a fan of low taxes. He was like a classic pro-business conservative, but he was also one of those guys who was like, can we just leave gay people alone? Like, just let them fucking get married. It was 2004. It was like, that was a hot opinion at the time.
Even Hillary and Obama were anti-gay marriage in 2004. Hell, they were conservative back then.
Yeah, and in 2008. Because remember...
It wasn't until 2012, the re-election, that he came out.
Right, where he was like, I guess my base is now... I guess now all the homophobes in my base are dead. I can now... Yeah, because they would always try to do that dance where they'd be like, we're for civil unions, but not for...
Isn't that bizarre to think? 2012, even the Democratic presidents and shit were anti-gay marriage? That seems so farcical.
I know. But it shows how scared they
That's
were.
Like, when I think of that, I think of like the civil rights era, like anti-gay marriage. Wow, what a change we've had in six fucking years.
Yes, yeah.
If people think we're going the wrong way, but man, we're more progressive than ever, I think.
I mean, it's...
We're passing common sense shit. Like, equal rights for all human beings. Whoa!
It's also like, think of the money. Like...
All the gay cakes we could make.
All the gay cakes, all the gay marriages. You're a tuxedo shop. You've doubled your business. If you're someone who make, like, let's say you're one of the people that makes those cake toppers, and you made way too many boys and not enough girls, now you can get used to boys in the thing. I was just like, just for the finance.
You sound like a conservative Democrat right now, because you're thinking of it from a business perspective.
That's the way to convince people.
That's like, why Michael Moore should have hired you. What the fuck?
I wanted, but then his show got canceled, long story short, before it ever aired.
Damn it.
I wrote multiple packets. I went in for multiple interviews. They called me on the phone. It was so much fun. They got me and Sarantia free tickets to his Broadway show.
Oh, was it good?
It was great. It was fantastic.
And after Michael Moore came up to you in the audience and shook your hand and you said, "Asterios, I'm sorry that the show didn't work out, but I looked at your packet and this idea about locking up the lesbian and the gay guy, that was some that was some top-notch shit. I think we should make that its own show."
Yes. And
you said yes, Michael Moore, of course.
Tune into my new series, Lesbian and the Gay Guy.
Locked in a room until they have sex.
Locked in a room until they both become straight, I guess. Coming this fall on Fox.
Coming spelled with a U.
Yes. Exactly. And also the word coming is spelled out in cum. The best way to spell it. Anyway, that's it for this week's Boomer versus Zoomer. You got anything else?
Has it been an hour already? I had a shit ton.
Oh, yeah. It's been, I'm not kidding.
I feel like we just started.
About 45 minutes.
Talk time. I wanted to tell you, me and Sarantia went out for breakfast this morning while you were recovering from your daily hangover.
Yeah.
And I came up with a great idea for either a book or a movie or maybe even a television series that I wanted to run by you.
Tell me.
So, and feel free to add to this pitch. It's still a blossoming idea.
Okay.
It's called The Great Good Boy Point Heist.
Okay.
It takes place in a utopian future. And here's where I came up with the idea, because everybody's talking about the big incel problem. I got banned from YouTube because of the incel problem. They think I'm promoting incels, and incels, of course, involuntarily celibate men, usually people who want to have sex but can't because they're incapable of getting girlfriends, either because of their lack of confidence or their poor hygiene or any number of factors. These are men, and they're usually jaded and upset with society. They want... perhaps sometimes vengeance. They feel like they're owed something that they're not getting. It's a messy subsect of the population. 99.99999% of which is not violent, like the Elliot Rodgers of the world. But unfortunately, one kid writes up a manifesto complaining about being an incel, and then he kills some people. And now, I guess, all 20-year-old virgins have to be discriminated against for some reason.
And the incel man driver...
Alex Manassian, something like that. Yeah.
And the incel that shut up that yoga studio because he specifically hated fit women.
Well, can you blame him? I mean, come on.
I know, I get so jealous. Oh my God. Can you imagine? Where do they have the time?
Is there a more privileged group of people in the entire world than fit white women? Women in America? Are you fucking kidding me? I would kill to be that.
He also, it's like, we all want women to be hot, but then we go and shoot the place where they become as hot as possible, the yoga studio. Pick one, incels. God damn it.
So the idea for my story is an answer to the incel problem. Society decides they're going to solve this problem together by coming up with a new form of currency called the good boy point.
Interesting.
The good boy point essentially works the same way as like the house cup in Harry Potter, where the professors at any time can say, "Hey, 20 points to Gryffindor." And it's not like an actual currency. They're not actually giving them anything. They can give as many points away as they want. So it's just completely imagined. In this world, all incels. So, and I think for the sake of the satire of the story, if you turn 13 and you're still a virgin, they're going to label you as a potential incel. Because all the true ripped super chads are probably having sex in their preteens. I have to imagine that would be the one of the humorous elements of the program.
Yep. So 9-year-olds fucking love it.
Well, I mean... Have you been to a middle school in the last decade?
No, it's ridiculous. I find, with their rainbow parties.
Yeah, fucking condom wrappers and lockers and shit. This is, it's not as fictional as you might think. It's actually quite sad.
But at least they're using protection.
Well, yeah.
You gotta give it up.
That's right. Rainbow parties. What's a rainbow party?
Sriracha, do you know what a rainbow party is?
Yes, nobody is.
Well, they can't hear her. You tell us what
it is. Okay, well, no, I just wanted to see if it was a Zoomer thing or just... Okay, so Sriracha knows what rainbow parties are, but our Zoomer boy, Mumpkin Jones, doesn't. A rainbow party is where a bunch of girls get different brightly colored lipstick, and then they go down on guys at different points on the dick to try to create like a rainbow of lipstick on the dick. Called a rainbow.
Wait, so they're not getting the guy to completion. It's just putting their lips around their dick for a second to form a circle of color.
Yeah, exactly. And the first one obviously creates it at the base, and then, or I guess you could go the other way too. But personally, I'd go from base to tip because
yeah, I'm sure
otherwise there's a lot of liquid, and then you could melt the anyway. And that's a rainbow party.
And you're saying 12-year-olds are doing this. Is that what Fox News told you?
That is what Fox News told me. 12-year-olds are having rainbow parties.
So if you're 13 and you're still a virgin, they'll say, hey, you have potential to become a violent incel. And it's sort of like a scarlet letter situation, or sort of like how they would label the Jews during the Holocaust. They're going to give you, they implement a mechanical device into your wrist that shows how many good boy points you have. And you accumulate points by being nice to women and doing nice things for women. And at any time, any woman, men can't do this, but any woman can give the boys good boy points. And they can use these to purchase things. For example, say if you have 1,000 good boy points, you can buy some chicken tendies or some chicken nuggies, something along the things that potential incels might enjoy. But the ultimate goal, of course, is if you hit 1 million good boy points, you get to have sex. Government mandated sex with a prostitute.
Just like Jordan Peterson wants.
I don't know. This is coming from my head, not from Jordan Peterson. So the goal of all of these potential incels, and this is how they stop them from being, you know, we stop them from being violent, is we reward them by being, if they're nice to women, they get rewarded with points, and ultimately they can pay to lose their virginity, just like how they think if you put enough good friend tokens into a girl, she has to have sex with you. Now we're doing that with the good boy points wristwatch implemented in your skin. Mm-hmm. And I assume if you don't save up the million points by the time you're 20, then they just execute you because it's too late.
Logan's Run style.
Yeah, yeah. So you have about 8 years to be that good of a boy. And also, don't buy too many tendies and nuggies because you need to save up to the million to have the sex. So the plot of... Because that's just the world building. We're just setting up the world right now. The plot of the great good boy point heist is like an Ocean's 11 style heist where a group of teenagers who have these wristwatches decide they're going to pull off, of course, a heist to steal good boy points so that they can all have sex and not be executed by the government. Mm-hmm. And I assume the heist will go horribly wrong, and through a bunch of wacky shenanigans, will they pull it off? I don't know. Find out in Mumkey's upcoming new book/movie/TV show, The Great Good Boy Point Heist. Asterios, would you like to get in on this with me?
This you should write this as a book first.
Okay.
Here's what I like about this. You're borrowing from a lot of existing elements that already work. You know Logan's Run?
No.
Okay, Logan's Run is this movie. It came out in the 70s where you get a little crystal in the middle of your hand. And when you turn 30, it starts to glow. And you got to go on the run because due to overpopulation, everyone over the age of 30 is executed. It's K. Logan has to go on the fucking run.
Wait, so why don't they just put like a time bomb in your hand so that you explode when you turn 30 and die?
A lot more sense.
Yeah, well, whatever.
They should have done that. They just put a collar on your neck.
It was the 70s, yeah, I guess. Yeah,
exactly. All right, so there's that movie. What was that fucking movie?
The one where you pay each other with your life, yeah.
Yes, exactly, where you pay each other with time and they have to pull a time heist.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we got that. I'm trying
to... We have great satire about society's views on people who don't have sex.
Yes, exactly. I gotta say, I like a lot of this stuff, and then there was one more point I wanted to make. I forget what it is now. But
well, what I want from you to assist me, I think you would be really good at coming up with funny things that they can buy with their good boy points. I think a lot of comedy could be mined from that. So, like, if you wanted to help me come up with the good boy points, prices, and whole market for these points, I would like to hear some of your thoughts on that.
Well, look, if I'm being honest, I would just make it stuff that I would really want. I would make
like,
it...
Like, you get tickets to The Last Jedi for, like, 10 good boy points.
Exactly. I would just make it like the arcade at Dave and Buster's, where it's like, well, if you save enough, you can get a PlayStation. Or you can get this glow-in-the-dark... Like, we got this big minion thing from Dave and Buster's.
They can't hear you on the other side of the room.
Right there, hold on. Look at this! We got it from Dave and Buster's.
You think a teenage incel wants a fucking minion plush? I think that'd be more of like a boomer thing.
Well, maybe not this guy, but it could be a Rick and Morty thing.
Yeah, they would love Rick and Morty. Yeah, yeah.
But here's I think there's a funny satirical angle to this where it's these things that you spend your good boy points are the things that will not get you laid. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if you're
Tendies and nuggies don't usually get me laid, so I think we're off to a good start.
They'll make you fat, unhealthy, and depressed. Right? That'll make it hard for you to talk to women and feel confident about yourself.
So it's like the ultimate test where you have to not give in to your incel tendencies by wasting your good boy points on these other things that won't get you laid in the first place. And if they have to execute you at 20, well, society's better off anyway, because you never had the self-control for 8 years to save up your points to, of course, do the one most important thing in this society, evidently.
Yes.
Have sex with a woman.
Yes. You better do that. And fast.
Yeah, you better.
It'd be fun if maybe there was an incel, like, messiah who's kind of trying to, like...
That's kind of what Elliot Rodgers is for.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, to lead, like, an incel counter-resistance...
You want to make it more of a Hunger Games thing? I just wanted a fun heist.
Well, I see. Look, I love the heist.
I like what you're adding here. I think we might have a trilogy of books ready. The first one is a heist to introduce the world, and yes, then maybe we have the uprising and blah blah blah.
Because in the first Hunger Games, it's really about the Hunger Games.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they talk about doing other Hunger Games, and there's a super Hunger Games and blah blah blah.
And then the third book is fucking dreck and sucks.
Yeah, because exactly.
Who cares about the revolution of this bull? Who cares?
I want to see you win these games.
Yeah, I want to see these kids kill each other.
Exactly. You're not selling me on the fucking, what if,
District 13, rise up against the Capitol. Shut up.
One leader's as bad as the next. Oh, I also hate at the end when they're like, turn out the leader of the rebellion's also shitty. I don't know. This guy put you all in districts and made you fight in a game show. Like, you're going to convince me, but this lady's also bad. It's like, you know, you can have a good guy and a bad guy in a movie. Yeah,
it's like 8th grade level sociology at that point. Like, wow, great message you put in these books for children.
Yes.
Such intrigue.
Well, yeah, it's the radical centrist of endings. It's like, yes, we get it. Everything stinks. All the parties are bad and everyone's in corporate America's pocket.
I really like enlightened centrism. I think it's a funny meme.
It is a very funny meme. So the bad guys are the Chads, and the bad guys are, like, there's a council of Chads and Stacys. I think there should be like a Stacy president. Like, you just call her President Stacy. Because my favorite.
Because when the incels can't vote, that's how a woman actually becomes president.
Yes, exactly. Only people that have sex have value, so only people that have sex get to vote. In fact, it's the first thing you have to do after you're done jizzing. You walk right to the election booth. It's so patriotic. I was thinking you could rip off a lot of the South Park movie. For this, because the South Park movie, they do the thing where, like, these kids curse and there's a V-chip and they put the kids in jail and you gotta go to war with Canada and there's a resistance movement. Like, incel,
we can find out what Brian what's his name,
Brian Bort- what would Brian Bortano
yeah, we
would
can
do.
Find out what he would do
yeah
in the book.
Yes, exactly. I like this. I'm sorry I don't have more to riff on it with you, but I do. All right, so there has to be like some, and then there has to be like lady incels, but nobody cares. Maybe like
I think we call them femcels.
Yeah, femcels. So like there's some femcels in there and they're like, we haven't had sex, and everyone's like, congratulations.
Oh,
like,
because
that's
because they're saving themselves.
Yes, exactly.
It's not involuntary. They're volcels. They're choosing to be celibate. Because and this is something I actually do believe.
Yeah.
In that even in the reality we live in, there is no such thing as a female incel, because I've seen the dark depravity of male incels on the internet, and they will have sex with literally anybody who would offer. So by definition, even the ugliest, grossest woman who thinks she's an incel, go on R9K. You will have sex tonight. The same cannot be said for any man who is in this position, I think. If I say right now, yeah. I will have sex with any woman, and if I truly mean that, there can't be a female incel. There can't, because she has the choice now.
You know,
she has the option to fuck.
This is, I've heard this opinion a lot.
Okay.
I've heard this opinion. In fact, I remember like a long time ago when I was like 21, like I had this exact same argument with like my 40-year-old female boss.
Prove me wrong.
Well, I'm trying.
Find me a woman who I would not have sex with to prove me wrong.
Okay.
See? But I could easily find a guy that you would not convince any girl to have sex with. His name is, never mind, I won't say his name.
Thank you for being nice to him. We don't have him coming after the show, too.
Andy Signor.
Look, it's, I don't know.
Sarantia, you're a woman. Do you think there are female incels out there? No, she says no.
Sarantia said,
I think the only way you could be an incel is if you had a medical condition.
She said you can only be a female incel if you have a medical condition. I would argue there are still male incels who would have sex with them, unless they were born without a vagina. In which case, maybe.
Okay. Okay.
Is this making you uncomfortable?
Yes, just make, honestly.
What do you care about women having sex?
I feel like you missed my satirical point entirely. So let's go all the way back to the beginning of it. I feel like there should also be a tribe, we're going to follow like a tribe of dumpy dudes. We should also follow a tribe of dumpy chicks who are all trying to get laid, but instead of this like point system that almost kills them, society's like, no, you don't want to get laid. And they're like, well, actually, we do. Mm. We'd really be nice to find some dick. We're really fucking
Because society
horny.
Shames men for not having sex and shames women for having
sex. Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And, you know, like, because there was that whole movie that came out recently with John Cena called Cock Blockers.
That's a good movie.
Did you see it?
Yeah, it's actually really good and like a sex positive story.
I assumed it was funny because I like Ike Barinholtz, I like John Cena, I like Leslie Mann, and I think I liked the writer director combo there or something.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be schlock. It was surprisingly one of the best comedies of last year. I'd recommend it a lot.
The satirical message in that movie is this dude is like trying to like protect his daughter's virginity stop her from getting laid.
Even though they're all like 18, I think, in the movie.
It's prom night. Also, you're John Cena. Like, you're a fucking muscle man and you're married to a model who's in real life married to a billionaire producer. Like, I think both of you guys had sex at age 11 and it wasn't that big a deal. But like, suddenly your daughter wants to get laid and it's like, and like, John Cena goes out and butt chugs to stop his daughter from having sex. And then the message there being like, hey, can we all just fucking relax? Like, let your daughter have sex on prom. Were a teenager too. So I feel like there's a fun satirical message there. You know, the incels and the lady incels.
What do you think this heist would look like? Like, what kind of heist do they go on to steal good boy points?
They would have to go. I think the good boy, I think it would be like a Chicken McNugget vault. It would be like
a digital currency, so I don't know how you steal it.
Well, see, that's the thing. It's like, well, how do you make it interesting? Well, the way the good points are created is that like Chicken McNuggets are melted down or something like that. Like they go to like the McDonald's factory and like
what the fuck?
Because they're saying it can't just be a cryptocurrency. I mean, the American dollar is backed by gold.
Yeah, but this is like a house points in Harry Potter where it's not backed by anything. It's just women decide how many points you get that day. And I forgot to mention that me and Sarantia were talking about this morning. If a guy is behaving inappropriately, a woman can take away his good boy points and reduce his score. So you always have to be on edge. Am I being nice to women? Am I being a good boy today?
Okay. What if yeah, because they just hack a computer and then we see the numbers at the federal good boy points thing go down and the numbers go up. That's too fast.
No, I want it to be like an Ocean's 11 style heist somehow.
What is the source of all good boy points women?
Yeah, because you can't, because then the incels could give them to each other.
Right.
You have to be nice to women to earn sex. That's the message of them.
That's true. No, and that's how real life works, too.
And also, I mean, your mom can give you good boy points because, I mean, if you've ever gone to these websites that I go to, oftentimes they'll say, "Hey, I cashed in my good boy points and mommy got me some McDonald's tendies." That was my whole inspiration. I love reading about that stuff. Good boy points are a real thing.
What if, no, unfortunately, I heard of the good boy points.
I love it.
What about this? What if they kidnap the president's mom because she can give out the most good boy points? And then one of them has sex with the president's mom. And then there's no longer... Like, what if the president's mom is like MILF? And so she gives out... She can... Like, what if...
It could be that the average woman has a limited number of good boy points she can give out, but like a high authority figure has unlimited.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Like whoever the lead Victoria's Secret angel can give out the most good
points. The hotter you are, the more points you can give out.
Because isn't that what we're saying? That like in society, your value is determined. Yes, exactly. So tens can hand out 10,000 good boy points, whereas ones can only hand out 1,000.
And your mom can only give you like 50 a day. Because, I mean, of course she's going to because she loves you.
She loves you.
She wants you to get laid.
Because if anybody could give out 1,000,000 good boy points, then there'd be one chick out there who every incel dude would manipulate into getting 1,000,000 points and then wouldn't have sex with her.
Yeah.
And then she'd get all frustrated and then she'd get a gun and shoot up a hunting lodge.
Whoa.
Which was not where you should shoot up, by the way. They have guns there.
A woman shooter? I bet that wouldn't be reported on the news. That doesn't fit that narrative at all, Asterios.
Everybody reported on the YouTube shooter. Everybody.
Did they? What's her name? Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. Move on. You're done.
Teresa Two Barrel?
Theresa May.
It was. Yes, exactly. I'm rhyming to Theresa May. There's a lot of good stuff happening here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think it's a brilliant idea. Maybe I could even make it into a graphic novel. My graphic novels are usually very successful.
Start with the book, yeah. And then the book can be the outline for the graphic novel.
Perfect.
This could be good.
Yeah.
You want to wrap up? Because I know you got to catch a flight.
I really wanted to pitch that before my flight. What time is it?
It's 4:12.
Yeah, it's about time I got going.
Sorry. Okay.
So what should we plug? It's the end of Boomer 14, baby. Oh,
okay. I guess, look, if you're looking for a way to help us that involves you doing nothing, download our back episodes. You can subscribe to the show at boomerversuszoomer.libsyn.com. Like, if you want to help us, subscribe. Download the back catalog and tell your friends.
You can subscribe even on iTunes or Podbean or any of those other websites, too, if you don't want to go to Libsyn, even though it's all connected to the Libsyn anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Go on iTunes and search for Boomer vs. Zoomer.
Go to monkeyjones.com. It's all right there on monkeyjones.com. Go to either of our Patreons to support us there. And if you want us to come to your town to do a show, or you live in or near any of the towns we already mentioned, tell us that you would come to the show so that we know we should do one there.
You're right. Right now we're looking at Boulder, Houston, Quebec, Salem near Portland, Sacramento, and Washington, D.C.
And we could stay in my house in Des Moines for free, so we could probably do a Des Moines, Iowa show, too.
I would love to do a show in Des Moines, Iowa. We could do a show in New York.
You can sleep on my parents' couch.
I would love... And wait, my parents, we could go down and do a show in Orlando.
Awesome.
Also, if you know a place where we could live for free, tell us. Anyway, that's it for Boomer versus Zoomer. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next time.
Goodbye, everybody.
Are you ready to zoom?